Hello and welcome to episode 13 of the First and Gold podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with Sim Longa. And Sim, it was a weekend. If you were listening last week, I thought that Purdue would go 3-0 in basketball, football, and volleyball. They went 2-1. You'll never guess which sport got the L. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but let's talk about the basketball team. And if you are listening, this is being recorded on Monday night, so the Purdue basketball team got their win tonight. They took care of business, I think is the best way to kind of describe it. It was a game that was much more closer than the final score. A 90-73 finish in Mackey Arena against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, who at one point midway through this second half had cut it down to as close as three. So it was a game where they really kind of tested the Boilermakers, and I think looking at it, it's a game where you would say it's like the perfect game to have as your first game to get the season started.
Yeah, no, I like you said, I think the score is not indicative of just how close it was, because that I'd say probably, from really the second half to I think probably or what probably the 5 minute mark, maybe the under four. Texas Corpus Christi was they were fighting all the way through, and there were times, we started off well in the first half in terms of how we were shooting from three and cooled off significantly in the second half. But yeah, we were able to, kind of grit it out, and you looked at to, TKR and Braden and Fletch were able to kind of pick up the slack down the stretch and be able to get that cushion back up. But yeah, it was definitely, there was a point, I think that, yeah, it was like 2 or 3 point lead. And I was definitely kind of nervous myself. So, yeah, like you said, they gritted it out and got the win. They took care of business. You're supposed to win a game like this, but I think it was a good first game of the year, in terms of testing us. What, they had this really good guard play, and just kind of giving us our first, like, meaningful, not to say that the exhibition game against Creighton wasn't like, wasn't meaningful, but it didn't count. But obviously, for a game that does count, Texas, Corpus Christi's a that's a formidable opponent. I think they've been to the tournament the last 3 years, so they definitely present some challenges and kind of give us a lot of things to work on despite winning. And it's kind of, you like that when you're able to, even if you struggle in a game, you're able to come out and still find a way to win. That's kind of the best of both worlds, because then you go back and you have film, and obviously you can identify the areas you need to work on. But then also, hey, at least we got the win, so that's good.
Yeah, and I think it was one that well, I'll say this too. I would not be shocked at all to see Texas A&M Corpus Christi playing again in March. They're just a really good all around team. And they didn't really back down at all. I think kind of the most impressive thing to me just watching them is they could have really. Like the game kind of got away at the end of the first half. I think Purdue was up by like 16,
16. Yeah.
and that was where they could have just,
It could have snowballed really quickly, and just like they cut, like if Purdue came out the second half and just, ran off a quick 8 to 10, then all of a sudden, we're talking about, yeah, they beat them by like 40, but came out in that second half and they were like, nope, we want to be here the entire game. So, we're hoping, for us and for our heart rates, wasn't the stress-free basketball we would prefer. But hey, I mean, it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing that kind of jumps out to me in this game is just the turnovers. I know that they, obviously at the start of the year, that's just one thing that's just kind of gonna happen is, especially with a team that has so many new parts like the Boilermakers do, but I guess the one concerning thing for me is the team turned the ball over 16 times, and Braden and TKR had 10 of those. So you can't really even blame it on, like the newcomers. Now, you could blame it on the newcomers, and maybe they weren't in the right spots where Braden thought they would be, or things like that. But How worried are you when you look at that, you know, arguably two of your top three most tenured players had 10 of the 16 total turnovers?
I mean, yeah, it's not a good look. I'm just trying not to get too, I'm not that concerned just because it's like it's every, I think everyone to an extent on this team, we talked about it, I think, in the previous episode about how everyone on this team is going to have to, is assuming a different role. Because, you know, you had Edie, who was just like, you know, obviously a walking 20 and 10. And he just attracted so much attention. It was, he attracted so much attention it in ways made the game easier for the guys around him. And obviously he's not there now. And so, yeah, I mean, it could be a bit of like, I just feel like it's just going to be an adjustment period for everyone. So I think, yeah, like you said, I mean, it's not great to see like your player of the year candidate to have six of your 16 turnovers, and your, you know, your star big man to have four, and is right, like you said, and like 10 of the 16 being of those two. But I don't know. I'm not really going to get too concerned about it. I think if I see it, you know, if you start to see it for a string of games, so like against Yale, against Alabama and Marquette, and you start seeing that, then that's when we'll really talk about it. But I mean, heck, even the last couple of years, there's been times where we've just been very turnover happy and we've been very charitable. So I'm trying not to get too worked up about stuff, because I just know like this, the way that Purdue's going to look this year, even when they're successful, I think is going to be different from what we've seen the better part of the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. But it doesn't mean that they can't still be successful. Yeah, it's just going to be different. And so, like, as guys are learning their roles, understanding where to pick their spots and whatnot, then I think that that's just going to take some time. For me, actually, what was probably more, which stuck out more, is just the fact that Braden Smith only took six field goal attempts. Like, that can't happen. And I don't care if it's against Corpus Christi. I want him to be more aggressive, just night in and night out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I would just argue anytime that Braden has as many turnovers as shot attempts, either side of that is not good. So whether it's low shot attempts or high turnovers, that's not a really good sign. I am curious just to kind of talk about Braden's game a little bit because I do think now, year three, he's the preseason player of the year. You know, I think he needs to be held to a higher standard. And we talked about it kind of last year with Edie and how Edie could have games where he would finish with like 20 and 12. And he'd be like, well, you know, yeah, that was a good game. But for Edie, you know, he left some points out there. You know, and it feels weird because Braden's stat line, he gets a double double and his two rebounds side of a triple double, but it just seemed like there was kind of a little to be left out there. I do think he could be more aggressive, but I also think he really did a decent job of taking what the defense gave him. And I think it does also just kind of speak to the depth of this Purdue team. One thing we talked about kind of going in to this year is how every game you could have a different, you know, score. And in the first half of this game, I think you argue that Miles really carried them with 14 points in the first half, four from three. And then, you know, Fletch kind of got things going in this second half, especially when you needed some shots. So, you know, I just think that kind of speaks to like the depth of this team, where there's a game where Brain can go out and have 15 assists. And then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if on Friday Brain comes out and drops, you know, like 25.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Miles, that him getting hot in the first half was huge, and being able to build that lead, which honestly was very important, just because, you know, you had that margin of error in the second half. But you're right. I mean, the depth of this team, you can have a different guy who's stepping up every night. And I know we were talking before we got on here about particularly about Cam and Miles, and how you have like those two are kind of interchangeable in the sense that if Miles is on and Cam's not, that's fine because you can just play Miles more, or it's vice versa. If Cam's playing well and Miles isn't, you can play Cam. They both possess, that athletic skill set, being able to guard on the wing, and obviously being able to drive the basket, both high flyers. And yeah, so I mean, it's the depth of this team, it definitely in its own way was on display tonight. And I think it's something you'll be able to see throughout the season.
Yeah, and I did just want to highlight quickly. Want to just give a quick shout out to Miles for his career high of 14 points. Believe all of that came in the first half. But he hit some big threes there where Purdue just needed some buckets. And he, I mean, just stepped up an instant offense off the bench. So a career high for him. Brayden's 15 assists were the most for a Purdue player in a season opener. So kudos to Brayden. And then I also just want to kind of touch on Fletch a little bit because he ended up finishing with, I feel like, a pretty quiet 21 points. But I just feel like he had a solid all-around game. 6 of 10 from the field, 3 of 5 from three, 6 of 7 from the line, and 1 turnover. But we kind of talked a little bit about it. And I know there's been a lot made about, his body and his strength, and the additional weight he's put on. But it did, at least in this, and early on here, it did seem like he was a different player, especially attacking the rim. Had at least one layup I can think of, where he drew some contact and was able to score, but just seemed kind of like a new element almost tonight there.
Yeah, I feel like Fletch was just, he played under control. He played, not to say that like he didn't last year, but just very, he very much so looked like a guy where the game has slowed down for him, and he just kind of knows like where he wants to get to on the court. Just like, it's almost like his processing of the game has sped up from, from last year to this year. And again, that's not to say that he was obviously, he wasn't like good last year, but yeah, like you said, I mean, 21, he had 21 points, he's 6 of 10, 3 threes, also had a couple assists. Just seemed like he played a very controlled like veteran game, like a game that you would expect from a guy who's been starting since day one. So yeah, I very much so, I think it's good that we call out Fletch for the game that he had. And I think they mentioned too, going back to Brayden real quick, I think that tonight he either tied and maybe passed Lou Jack for I think in career assist. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah, and I do know just looking at the game notes, he moved into a tie for sixth in the school's career assist with 460. So I would not be shocked as he continues to kind of climb up the ch charts there as the assists will come. But just to kind of highlight what you were talking about with Fletch, there was one play in the first half that I think is a perfect example of kind of what you were talking about. He had the ball on the left wing, and a defender ran him off the 3-point line. He did a little pump fake, took one dribble, and buried a mid-range a jumper. And when he made that, I remember, like, oh man, if he's hitting those, he's dang near impossible to guard. But that just kind of highlights your point of kind of how it looks like he's almost taking that next step. If he can get like a mid-range jumper like that, where, just one dribble and pull up, it's just going to make him so much harder to defend.
Yeah, and I very much, I think too, it helps like if you have, if he's been able to unlock that mid-range game, just it I think it's a way for him to really consistently score. You're gonna have some games obviously where you're not hitting from three, But if you're able to hit that mid-range was where you can still live off of that. And then I actually would mention a play myself where I think it was in the second half, he got the ball again on the left wing defender comes out, forces him off that, and he just seemingly calmly just dribbles right, has a defender on his hip, drives to the basket. I think got it up. I think put a layup in off the glass, and that just it just. But it felt so like, all right, cool. If you're gonna take this away, cool. I have this counter, and I think a lot of times that's what you want to see out of guys as they're progressing throughout their years, is them adding on layers to their game, becoming more comfortable with doing other things. And I think that, the last 2 years, and I'll give him some credit that more so towards the back half of last year, he started to show being able to do like more from the free throw line in. But yeah, like just like today, it just very much so seemed like, okay, yeah, maybe he now has like all three levels to where like he can drive to the basket, which I think is still kind of that's probably the last part he has to really refine. But in terms of his ability to get to the basket, finishing is obviously another story, but he's able to finish, attack the basket. He's clearly, it seems like he's maybe unlocked the mid-range, and then obviously we all know what he's capable to do from deep. So yeah, it just seems like he this year he's gonna probably showcase the fact that like, no, he has like a way more well-rounded game that I think people are gonna be aware of. And I feel like we're gonna have a lot of instances this year where you look at the stat sheet and you see, oh, Fletcher had, 15, 17 points, and then you will remember some big shots that he made down the stretch, but like you won't remember the fact that, he had 12, 14 just quietly all along the way that were kind of keeping us steady, keeping us on schedule.
And I did just want to highlight too, like it may not seem that major, but he finished with two assists also. Excuse me. And I just think like if he can be able to make a couple of plays also, like I don't think he needs to average like six or seven assists, but if you can get him, two, three, four assists in a game also, where he's making some plays off the dribble. That's just also gonna, just add to his game. So just a really good overall game from him. And then I did want to talk about the freshman Daniel Jacobson, making his first career start in his first game. And I know kind of the knock on, or not knock, but what everyone says is he's got to add weight. Let's see how he plays, against Big Ten big men. And those are valid points. But if you look at his stat line, man, I'm not sure if you could have imagined a better initial game. Just efficient, 4 of 6, 5 of 7 from the line, 7 rebounds, 3 blocks. And we've talked about it, and just from day one, he's just an elite rim protector, and is something that Purdue really needs on the back end. And I know he finished with 3 blocks. I think he altered a couple more too, but just overall, he just came ready to play. He had a very, very good first game.
Yeah, I think one thing that also was really impressive is that he drew 7 fouls and he didn't have a foul himself, and he played almost 25 minutes for a
Really.
freshman for a true freshman to do that in his first game. Again, yes, it's we're not sitting here saying that we played, a top 10 team in the country, but as we mentioned at the top, like Corpus Christi is not, they're no slouch. They've made it to the, they're a good program. So and you just kind of figure with a young big that they're probably going to pick up like a couple stupid fouls of the ones that are just kind of like, hey, like just getting adjusted to the speed of the game. But he did. He had a very efficient and impactful game. And like you said, he only had three. I mean, he had three block shots. I want to say only, but he had three block shots. But I'm sure he altered at least probably three or four more. And those are things that don't show up on the stat sheet, but obviously they matter. In the bigger picture, because that reminds me of like kind of like what AJ Hammonds, like you would see his stat line would be like 9, 8, and 3, but if you watched the game, you knew like he impacted a lot more than just like if he got 2 or 3 blocks on a night, you knew he was changing the game and just more than how it showed up on the stat sheet.
Yeah, and Robbie mentioned it briefly on the broadcast, but I did want to highlight too because I think it's a really interesting comparison. But Robbie said in talking to Matt Painter that Matt compared Daniel to Juwan Johnson as a freshman. And you can see it just in kind of like their body types and just the length and how they need to put on just a little bit of muscle and kind of their style of play. But man, that is some high praise to be compared to him. And if that's the case, man, the sky is the limit because JJ was a baller, All American. So anytime you're getting compared to him, and Paint doesn't just throw those out, you know, just because.
Willy-nilly, yeah. Gotta see some. It's usually because he sees something and he understands. Like you said, the biggest thing with Jacobson is just the fact that he's able to come in and be impactful on defense from day one, and that's just something that I know. I think we all know Painter values so much. If you have someone who can come in day one and contribute defensively, and in his case, obviously being a center, being able to be a rim protector, and just like we saw with Edie for the last few years, is guards approach you differently. They think twice. The jumper, they pull up for a jumper instead of attacking the basket when they know you're there. Just the way that they even when they do attack the basket, you like your chances of Jacobson altering, excuse me, impacting that shot. Those are all things that Painter will, I think he covets quite strongly, and so it explains then why Jacobson got the start and got as many minutes as he has, because clearly he's been able to earn that level of trust with Paint.
Yeah, totally agree. I did just want to also kind of highlight the two freshman guards, because I know they were probably the two most talked about players from the two exhibition games, and that's Jakari Harris and PJ Cox. And neither one of them kind of had, you know, jump out stat lines. You know, they both kind of had some freshman moments. But I thought in that first half, especially PJ had a couple of plays, especially on the defensive end, that kind of just one I can remember when he got the he picked up a guy full court and drew the jump ball, and you know it kind of just got the crowd back into it, and kind of like a dead time in the game. Where kind of we needed just a little bit of juice. And so, I mean, he only finished with 3 points. He made the only shot he took, which was a three from the corner, I believe. But I think he had a pretty impactful game, especially in that first half.
Yeah, he did. I think the only reason why he didn't play more is just because the game got closer, and so Payne wanted to have Braden out there. But yeah, I mean, for only playing 10 minutes, I mean, again, kind of like with Jacobson, CJ drew two fouls, didn't have a foul, he had 3 points, one assist, and yeah, he did have a turnover, but had a steal. And like you said, he was picking guys up 94 feet. And that's the type of stuff that especially coming off the bench, you have a guy who comes off the bench and you're thinking like, all right, cool, like that's usually supposed to be like a little bit easier. And no, this guy now comes in the game and he's just gonna pick you up 94 feet. And if you're loose with the ball, he will pick he'll you know he'll pickpocket you. So yeah, I mean, those two are gonna have, I think they're gonna be the two who have their ups and downs just being freshmen. And I think, because basketball shifted just being overall a more guard-oriented game, there's gonna be games where they take their lumps. But those are two guys who I can see again when we're in, like, by mid-January, late January, early, mid-January, February, where they've kind of come along in terms of knowing, like, okay, this is the like understanding how to defend, how to just understanding how to play at the speed of of college ball, and being able to be even more impactful to where you won't necessarily have to see Braden playing almost the entire game, or even Fletch. You'll be able to see them get more rest because of the fact that Painter will probably have more trust in being able to play those two at the same time and not necessarily have a dip.
Yeah, and I did think it was interesting. There were some spurts in the first half where Braden CJ were playing together. And I thought they did some good things there, but I won't comment on the lineups because I don't want Payne to call me a bozo. But
Yeah,
just
Joe
thought
can.
that was
Yeah, Joe can
thought
be
that
the
was
only
kind of
bozo.
interesting. I did just want to also kind of, as we wrap things up with the basketball, get your thoughts. It came out, I think it was yesterday, news broke that Jack Venter was going to redshirt. We talked about it when kind of we did our preview with the incoming freshman that he was the most likely to redshirt. So not really a too much of a surprise there, but I think it was kind of interesting that Raleigh Burgess is not going to redshirt and going to play. Played 5 minutes, got a rebound. Didn't have much of an impact on the game. I hate to keep like kind of talking about it, but he did just kind of look like a freshman out there, kind of getting his feet wet. But just kind of big picture for the year, kind of just I think it speaks volumes to the trust that Painter has in him. That there's probably going to be a lot of games where Raleigh gets about 5 to 6 minutes. But I think Painter expects, those to be impactful minutes on there, and a player as talented as Raleigh, can come in and kind of make an impact in a limited role. But just kind of thought that was interesting and just kind of curious your thoughts about the decision not to redshirt him.
Yeah, I mean, I think I thought it was interesting. I kind of figured, figured Jacobson wasn't going to get redshirted, and then like you said, Benter, it just seemed like there just weren't going to be enough minutes. So yeah, he was always going to be a victim of, he was going to be a victim of the depth. But I was surprised that Burgess isn't, and like you said, it does seem like he's going to have these small windows from game to game where he's able to come in and kind of spell. And I think it's, I kind of feel like it'll be like on some flex stuff. So like he comes in, and in those first couple of possessions, he's able to knock down a couple shots, and you can just kind of tell like he's playing with some good energy. I could see him getting upwards to 10 minutes. I think that if he develops throughout the course of the year, I can see. The minutes I think he takes are Will Burgs, because I think Burgess gives you more offensive upside than Berg does, just simply because he's able to step out. I mean, amongst other things, I think just because of the fact he's able to step out from three. But I think that if he's able to show you things in terms of or like rebounding, being able to defend without fouling, obviously moving the ball around without turning it over, I think that Burgess is in a position too where throughout the course of the year he can earn the trust of Painter to where it's almost like what Painter did last year with Miles, where like he just kind of gave him some spurts, and then turned him all the way on, when we got to the tournament. So yeah, I was surprised, but. I hope that Raleigh's able to take advantage of this situation, and it can be challenging to be able to come in and only get 4 or 5 minutes. I know Payton talked about it last year about how when you're a deep team and you want to get like multiple guys in, it can be hard coming off the bench when you only get 4 or 5 minutes. But like again, that's kind of a it's a good problem to have when you have such depth to where you're trying to find minutes for guys who you believe can be impactful and be able to kind of change the game for you.
Yeah, not that that's a good call out as far as a comparison to Miles last year, because I think they will be kind of in that same type of role with those spurts. But it'll really be interesting to watch kind of as the season unfolds how those minutes kind of play out as far as the bigs, because I think KKR and Daniel have kind of planted their flag as far as the starters.
Yeah.
And barring any type of foul trouble, they're going to get 20 plus minutes each. So there's not going to be a lot of minutes to be had out there. So it'll be really interesting to see kind of how that plays out as the year kind of unfolds. But all in all, I think it was a good solid win. For the Purdue team, 90-73. It was a good challenge. Obviously the competition is going to get stiffer. But a lot of positives to take away, and also a few things to work on, which I'm sure Paint will have them working hard on in practice, and also probably most importantly, everybody came out healthy. So really, you really can't ask for much more there. But let's switch gears a little bit, and talk about the football team over the weekend. And another, I feel like we do this every week, kind of joke that it's Groundhog's Day, but almost getting to be pretty crazy where the Boilermakers find themselves down early, battle back in the second half, and then things get away from them or losing overtime. This one, they lose 26 to 20 in overtime. And there's just not a lot more to talk about as far as the game. We talked about how this was really one you thought that they needed to have, one of their probably, for lack of a better term, easiest games remaining on the schedule. And I think probably the biggest disappointment is just they came out flat again, and just continue to find themselves in holes early. And it's just something that they can't dig themselves out of the hole.
Yeah, man, it's more of the same. And I mean, I'd say that I think it was the easiest game that they had, the most winnable game they had the rest of the way in. And yeah, just to not be able to get the win. And it wasn't like, obviously it's not like they really got blown out, but it's just feel like you just feels like if we had played better, especially offensively, if we played better offensively, able to finish a couple more drives off. Especially when you get in the red zone, goal to go. If you're able to finish off a couple more drives, I mean, you win this game probably. I would argue to say you probably could have won it by 10, a couple possessions, which would have been, it just would have been great. And one thing I want to point out, obviously, I was at the game, but the fans, like, we continue to show up, and the show, like, how like the attendance for Saturday was so good. And obviously, because we've seen some home games this year where people were leaving by by halftime, all the everyone was there until the very end. And it just, you would have really liked to see it to get the win, if for nothing else, just for us as fans, just being able to have something. And so at least we could have entertained the idea of, like, dude, do we storm the field right now? But yeah, man, it just, it's like at the hour you need it, you don't get the complimentary football that you need. I mean, the defense did a good job of just being able to hold Northwestern to where the offense did have time to be able to be able to piece together a few drives late, to be able to tie it, and then, to take it into overtime. But obviously, yeah, then in overtime, we know what happened, in terms of, get the ball first, and then they, controversially, they go for it on fourth down, don't get it, and then, Northwestern proceeds to score, I'd say, rather easily, in a few plays later. And now, you're looking at, what is it, what, 1-7 now. So it's just kind of more of the same. It's really disappointing. It really is. You just, between, I feel like this, and even with the Illinois game, they're just two that, like, if you had been able to get these two, like those two, or even just one of the two, it just, give you just a little bit more kind of in the shoulders of, like, all right, like, there is something here. And I still feel that way, but it's hard. I mean, it's hard to, to sell that when you've only won one game, and against, ever since that Indiana State game, and your competition has gotten better, you've just, you haven't shown up. Yeah, it's just very frustrating.
Yeah, so the loss now, they dropped, like you said, to 1-7, 0-5 in the Big Ten. And things don't get any easier as they travel to Columbus this weekend, to take on number 4 Ohio State. I believe they're like 38.5 point underdogs, which is the highest in history. Don't fact check me on that, but that's what I've heard. So it's It's not going to get any easier. But another disappointing loss on there, and we'll talk about that kind of more next week. But I did just want to also make sure that we highlight the women volleyball team. We talked about it a little bit on the last pod. Like, I don't think anybody's going crazy and saying like that Purdue's back, or like they should, you know, that they're the best team in the Big Ten now, after going out on the road and sweeping Maryland and Rutgers. But it was just two games where they did what they had to do. They swept both teams in three sets, and it was just kind of very much a business trip, and they went out there and handled their business and got two more wins.
Yeah, Maryland and Rutgers aren't two of the best teams in the Big Ten. So the expectation this weekend absolutely was that they were gonna, you know, Purdue was gonna go in there and handle business. I was personally thinking, okay, maybe one of them they win in four sets. It just can happen that way sometimes where, you know, a team gets hot in the set and, you know, they're able to run some points off, and all of a sudden, you know, they find themselves, you know, stealing a set from you. But the fact that they went in there, swept them back to back days, you know, head back to West Lafayette, that's what you like to see, that in terms of just going there, business trip, get it handled, and you know, no stress. So, you know, unlike the football team, volleyball team had some winnable games and took care of them in a very stress-free manner. So we appreciate the ladies for that, for sure.
Yep, and they did jump back into the top 10. The latest polls, they jumped two spots from 11 to 9. So always good to see that. And I did just want to highlight too, I thought it was kind of interesting. It's been a like interesting last five matches. So they've swept the teams in four of those five, and then you have the Wisconsin game in there where they so just, you know, just kind of interesting there. But you know, outside of that Wisconsin game, the ladies are really rolling right now. And they will they hit the road on Friday. They'll travel to Bloomington to take on IU and then return home for a game Sunday against Michigan. But just want to make sure we highlighted the ladies there with a couple nice bounce back wins. Like we said, it's exactly what we thought that they should do. But as we as Purdue fans know, what Purdue should do and what does happen aren't always the same. So it was just nice to see a couple of stress-free wins there.
Right. But shout out to Dennis Green. They were who we thought they were. So,
Well, that'll just about do it on this episode again. Want to thank everybody for listening. Please continue to share and tell all your friends, your family, give us the 5-star reviews. But appreciate all the love and all the listeners there. So thank you, everybody, and boiler up.
yeah, thanks for the love. It's the holiday season. So, yeah, give us a 5-star review.
Yes, please.